Yes, you could charge for the service, but I think a lot of schools, the way they provide accommodations to students who need materials recorded is that they often will rely on the easiest or cheapest means, which often means volunteer means, which I think you lose a certain amount of control of the quality. And I guess that might happen in Mr. Fulton's case, and I don't know. If you were to start charging full cost for the service, is it possible that colleagues might just look elsewhere?
Oh, I don't think there's any question about that, Bob. We have, you know, some colleges will, you know, have students do it, or we really pride ourselves on the quality of the learning tapes that we're doing. You know, we have professionals in those fields to do it, and you're right, many colleges will look for the cheapest way to do it. If we raise the amount too much, you know, some colleges, the University of Nebraska-Lincoln gets some tapes from us when they're able to get a student to do it for less cost, they'll do that. So you're right, they'll go the cheapest way they can in many cases.
I'm wondering if there is any kind of library having been developed of the tapes that you do for the students, or once they're done, are they just...
No, we keep, first of all, whenever a school contacts us, we make sure that whatever they want read isn't already in the Library for the Blind and Dyslexic, first of all. Second of all, once we tape a tape, we keep the master. And if somebody else comes back and is taking that same course, sure, we'll just use the... We have a library there, and it's getting bigger all the time. The trouble, as you well know, college textbooks change constantly. I mean, it isn't, you know, you buy a book and two semesters later the prof has done a sixth edition, and it's just not, they don't, you know, unless you have some literature courses, they just don't last too long because they're outdated so fast. But sure, yeah, we keep a library, and wherever possible we will just use a tape if it already exists. But,
how do you publicize that is available, or is that connected in with the National Library Service or the Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, or, you know, because if you find out whether they've done it or not, do they find out whether you've done it or not? How widely publicized? Because I actually haven't seen any listings or anything of the books that are available, or the you know, I serve on the, or have for a few years served on the what was the National Advisory Group on Collection Building Activities, now it's going to be the Collection Building Committee for NLS, and one of the things that is very important, if there are programs like this which are successful, is that they be out there, you know, that we know about them, and that people can have access to the materials that are available. Otherwise, it becomes less.
And why should the same textbooks have to be recorded over and over all over the country when they're recorded and can be reproduced?
Well, exactly, and that's why we check before we start a project to make sure it isn't available on tape elsewhere. Whether the National Library checks with Radio Talking Book, the Listening Link program, they do not. I mean, we could make them aware more of what we're doing, but we're pretty small potatoes to them, and we do not have that kind of relationship with them. But it's certainly something we could look into.
Okay, but currently you don't like put it out on any kind of like is it out on a website anywhere or anything like that?
No, we work with the counselors at, you know, colleges and universities, and they know what, you know, they know what we have. No, we do not have on our website, which is about 2 weeks old, incidentally. We do not have a list of all the books that we have, because again, they get outdated so fast that when we do a project, it's almost, you know, we're thinking we're doing it for a student, and the idea of us, you know, being able to use that tape again is, I don't know what the percentage is, but it's not it's not a lot. Again, because textbooks change so darn fast.
So the library is kept for the off chance that somebody will use it?
That somebody may be in an upcoming semester. Typically, the way the process is, the student, the college will, you know, be working with the counselor, and we do not typically work with the students. We work directly with the counselor at the schools, and they'll say, we'll get the textbook at the beginning of the semester, a syllabus, and then our reader. I mean, it's like them taking a college course themselves. They'll do the they'll need to keep up with those work, with that work, and bring those tapes into us, and we give them to the college, who in turn gets them to the student. And you know, we've got again, we'll keep the master after that's done. But you know, I'm sorry, Janet isn't here. She could tell. But the percentage of tapes that we reuse has to be less than maybe 5%.
Question.
Yes, sir.
How long it takes to the average to record a book? Because I know it varies according to how big the book is. But how long after you receive the syllabus takes you to return the book?
What typically, with a college textbook, you know, ideally we're going to get some lead time. It doesn't always happen, but we really, it's pretty unusual when a reader will tape the whole book and give it to the student at the beginning of the semester. What will happen is they've got the syllabus, they've got the course outline, they will keep up ahead of time with the student, so the student, you know, knowing next week they're covering chapters 5 and 6, will have that tape in his or her hand, you know, before the class, you know, starts doing that.
I have a question or maybe a suggestion. Mm-hmm. As a student, I know I was very involved with students. We want students to be in charge of their own order of books. When I say we, I mean blind people in general. Mm-hmm. Is there a reason why a client or a student cannot contact you directly? Or if you haven't think about that, is that a possibility?
You know, we have. There are, in a few cases, we've had students contact us directly. It's more of a housekeeping thing. I mean, again, at Metro Community College in particular, and at certain times, the University of Nebraska-Lincoln, the Med Center, they're a ton of students. I mean, there are 25, 30 students. It's much easier to, and it just works better to have the counselor work directly with our office staff than have, and it's an inconvenience for the students to have to come, because they typically physically pick it up. Right. So the counselor will come out. It's more of a, to help the students so they aren't having to run out all the time and get chapter 7.
Well, there is though a price for that convenience and practicality, because students get too used to just go to disabled student services. They take care of them. And then when they graduate, they don't have anybody to take care of them, to look for a job to be in charge. So there is a price, and that's why
sure,
I'm mentioning.
Sure. Well, we've had students come out to the office, and that happens. But it's more to accommodate us, and we can sure look at that. But you know, where we're located is we're not right on Dodge Street in Omaha. We're up northwest, and bus service, and you know, even taking a cab or asking somebody for a ride, it's you know, it's a nice spot, but it's not like in the middle of O Street. It's not at 48th and O.
Now, you said, what is the total budget of RTV?
The total budget this year is $231,000.
And you suspect that Listening Link is accounting for $40,000 of that $231,000?
That would be just an estimate based upon, if we took, you know, if we factored in the, you know, space and rent and the cost for the program coordinator and so forth, it would be no more than that. That would be, I'm just, maybe 35 to 40, right in there.
What is your reserve? Do you have above that $220,000? Do you have any reserve above that, though?
Yeah, we do. When, as I say, when I first got to Radio Talking Book, it's no fun not knowing if you're going to be able to pay your people, and so we worked real hard on getting enough. So we've got, you know, about a year out, you know, in case I walk out and get hit by a car in the driveway here this summer. We're just not raising any money. We've got reserve set aside for about a year of operations. We also have reserve set aside that's earmarked or designated for receivers and equipment. Because some of the money we got from foundations, particularly ask for that. We also have some money set aside. Nebraska Public TV is going to go digital pretty soon, and when that happens, it's going to be a huge expense for us. We've started to set a little bit of money aside for when that happens, because that's going to change our whole receiver setup. All these receivers we've bought over the years, they will still, they'll become obsolete.
So when the digital thing happens with public television, have you, do you already know what kind of receivers, like are you underway in having that happen, or are you?
No, our typical supplier, they have not developed something that's going to work because the technology is still a little shaky. I know when I talk to Nebraska Public TV engineers, they describe the digital spectrum as, you know, here's a box, and over on this side you'll be able to get Nebraska Public TV. Here's another box where you can get Nebraska Public Radio. Here's another little notch where there'll be distance learning. Here's one reserved for Radio Talking Book Network. Here's one for something else and teleconferencing. And they're thinking that everybody will get one of these digital boxes, which is what people are going to have on their TVs. But I think the suppliers of the radio receivers that we use now that we loan out to people, you know, we'll come up with something that'll be a little bit more streamlined than that. But you know, Nebraska Public TV is, if they're not on the cutting edge, they're pretty close to it. I mean, they're doing a lot. They're usually kind of a step ahead of a lot of other educational, you know, television, radio systems. So no, we don't. Dick's not working in the basement on a new digital receiver yet. Yes. Yes, Bob.
The radio talking book signal can be picked up if you have stereo TV.
Right? That's right. Exactly.
I was just wondering how many of the of their customers, in fact, have stereo TV and the receiver. You know, I mean, it seems like they really don't need the receiver if they can get the signal from their television.
Yeah, what we found is that's true. If you have a newer TV, a stereo TV, and usually through your remote control, if you hunt around, you have some options on picking up the sound. There's stereo, there's mono, there's SAP or secondary audio program. So a listener can turn to Nebraska TV and then find, you know, go over to SAP and they hear the radio talking book signal, and it's a wonderful signal. There's no question about that. What we found is a lot of our folks that we serve are of limited income. They don't have a stereo TV. You know, I have a hard time with my remote control, and I'm sighted. It's pretty tough for. And then they have to be in a certain room. The nice thing about having one of those radio receivers, which if you haven't been around one, it's just about the size of a toaster or a table radio. You could actually take it into another room and plug it in somewhere. And then, you know, we get, or Nebraska Public TV, they get calls all the time of people who want to watch Nebraska TV, but somebody has changed it to SAP and they're trying to watch the Jim Lehrer News Hour, and they're hearing somebody read the Lincoln Journal Star. So it's a little cumbersome, you know. But we have a lot of people who do listen through their TVs. There's no question about it. But we have a lot of people who are, again, we serve all ages, but we serve a lot of older people that are in group homes or nursing homes, or they're bedridden a lot of time. And gosh, it's sure nice to just have one of those receivers that you can reach, and there's a dial right there, and you don't have to flip through the remote control. I mean, on some TVs, there's actually an SAP switch, but those are few and far between. I mean, it's real hard to access. But again, we do have a lot of people who listen to us through a TV, but it doesn't work for everybody.
Is it Ruth? Are you the listener that came? The woman?
Pardon me?
What is your name?
Ruth.
Ruth. Ruth, are you familiar with the Talking Book Library, where you can get magazines and books?
Down at Lincoln?
Yeah.
Oh, yes, I have that.
And so you get books and magazines from time to time?
Yes, that I listen to, yes.
Are you familiar with Newsline, a way to listen to the newspaper on the telephone?
No, I don't. I get all of that through Radio Talking Book, because I have it right there, I turn it on. I have the schedule, so I know at what time this is being read and what time that's being read. And all day long, it keeps me in touch with what's going on with the world.
With Newsline, though, if you want to listen to the paper now versus at a set time, you can pick up the telephone, dial Newsline, and listen to the World Herald when you want to listen to it, rather than at a set time. And I just wondered if you were familiar with that service.
But does that, would that still have the touch that I have here? I recognize the voices, I know who is there.
No, you're not going to get a personal reader. I mean, it's a, there's several computer voices that you have to choose.
And that you have. No, this is a personal touch, something that you enjoy. You turn it on and I think, oh, well, that's Linda. No, that's this one.
Yeah, there are quite a few alternatives to, you know, the Radio Talking Book or Newsline. You can, if you have that ability to have a computer and so forth. Or,
I don't have any of that. I don't have computer and all of that.
But you have a telephone.
I have a telephone.
Well, just, you know, just a service out there that you might check into. It's available to you as as a blind person.
I have Radio Talking Book. That's my answer. I know when they're reading the different things. I listen to it at that time.
Sure.
It's a personal touch. It's very wonderful. And I didn't realize there was so much there. It's excellent. And they do things. And that, I don't just stay in my home. And I also, I'm there. I want to help, too. So I say, you're going to do something? First time they said they were going to the playhouse, I said, how can the blind possibly do that and go to the playhouse? So I can go on with things that I've done all my life and help. And I can help because I still have just, I'm legally blind, but I have a little bit of sight in one eye, a little bit. So I still want to do that type of thing. I don't want to just sit back and do nothing. So I call for everything. I call for Radio Talking Book when they're going to go and play bingo. The first time they were going to play bingo, I said, how on earth can the blind do that? So I had to go and find out. Of course, they don't Braille. Well, I'll learn Braille. Well, when you get to be 86 years old, going on 87, you can't feel the Braille anymore. I can't feel it. I can't learn it. But Dick tells me what they're going to do, and I have the receivers, so I can do all of those things. And anyway, I can help. I want to, because I'm so appreciative of what they have. It's helping me there, be part of life. Not an old lady saying, you gotta help me because I can't see. I don't want to be like that. I want to still be helpful. None of my children live here. So I don't have anyone to help. I have to do it myself. And so I'm so terribly appreciative of them helping me stay here and know what's going on in the world. And on Sundays when I talk to my grandchildren and they're talking about these digitals and all these things, Grandma doesn't know from straight up what they are. But I know what I do, what I have to have to live and stay here. I do know, and I get all of that in this wonderful life through Radio Talking Book, right there where I can turn it up.
I think we have a fair amount of people listen to us that use Newsline too. I always think that they, you know, offer, you know, both have different strengths.
Yeah, as long as a person's aware of both.
Yeah,
sure.
I think that, you know, that's, you know, that's fine. I think what Ruth says, the personal, a lot of people like to hear that friendly voice. You know, we do read some local papers that aren't available on Newsline. You know, the Council Bluffs Nonpareil, the North Platte Telegraph, the Grand Island Independent, the Scotts Bluff Star Herald, the Norfolk Daily News, Columbus Fremont Papers, and you know, we think of ourselves as more of a local service. Newsline does a great job and provides you know, I think they can complement each other real well. And different things work for different people. So I, you know, as far as we're concerned, the more we I know we have lots of listeners. They listen to not only radio stations, but they read newspapers on the internet. And you know, as far as we're concerned, the more ways we can get print information out to people who need it, I mean, that's the bottom line. That's what we're after here. We're just another way of doing it.
Well, just to be frank, I just, you know, a thought occurs to me after listening to this is, you know, the listening link, that if the $20,000 cut did happen, that listening link, the schools, their biggest nightmare is when a blind kid shows up and says, I got these classes, I need these books, and they go, oh God, what are we going to do? If you're providing a good service there where they can turn to, why shouldn't they pay what it costs? They don't want to reinvent the wheel every time, find volunteer students, come up, a local production site of books, to me, seems like something that's a service that's needed. Why can't you charge what the cost is and absorb a 20,000 cut from, because essentially what we're doing, the state, is we're giving you $20,000 so that you can charge less than what the cost is to these schools for a service that they need to provide. That just, you know, that just occurs to me, and so I don't want to be coy. I just, that thought jumps right out.
And I'm sure that's something we look at. I think Bob Deaton made a good point. I mean, you know, you get what you pay for, and the schools have, you know, everybody's got budget problems. You know, we're trying to provide the best quality product we can as cost effectively as we can. And all I'm saying is if we lose some money through NCBVI, you know, that's something we're going to have to look at. And I guess I'd ask who, you know, who's going to... We're not interested in gouging people, you know, for money.
It's not gouging to charge them what it costs.
Well, yeah, you can look at that. You know, we have lots of... I'd only agree with what Bob Deaton said, that school, you know, if it gets to be too costly, schools will look at alternative means.
Well, if you're doing it on a mass scale, how can they do it for less?
And the kid, because they pay students minimum wage to do it, and
why can't you use students?
Because we do in some cases, but basically we have, you know, we have law techs, we have medical techs, we have MDs, we have lawyers, we have professional people reading these.
They're volunteers.
I beg your pardon?
They're volunteers, correct?
Yes.
And so, to me, a volunteer is cheaper than paying a student minimum wage. And I agree with what Bob is saying, that why not discharge the cost? Not a profit, but just the cost.
Well, likewise with Newsline, that's a free service, isn't it?
Correct.
Well, that has copyright issues, and they can't charge for that.
Well, there must be some way, but it works both ways, you know. If you argue that they should pay for the book, you should pay for the Newsline. It's the same argument. You have to work around it somehow. I remember the readers I had in college, and I'll take a professional reader any kind of time.
Yeah, but they're not professional, they're volunteers.
No. They're volunteers.
Yeah.
What's the cost of training, what goes into the training for the readers?
There's initially each month we have an evening training session that's about 3 hours, mm-hmm. and then from then on each of the individual will come into the office and visit with our program coordinator. I can't tell you it's $156.10 to train a reader. I don't know. Different people pick it up faster, mm-hmm. understand the cueing, understand the machines better. Some need a lot of help, so.
I'd like to make a comment. I don't want to put you on the spot, but you know, it might be something for you to think about, just charging what it cost you to produce that tape, not just the cost of the cassette.
Or just cover more of the cost. So it sounds like right now you're just really charging for the cost of the cassette itself.
And some administrative costs, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's, you know, again, I mean, a school, you know, everybody knows that if they can get a good service for nothing, I mean, who wouldn't take that? But if they got to have the service, they you start with that they have to provide the students with this materials. You know, sure they'd love to have it for free, but it's, you know, who works for free out there? It's a service that has a value and should have a cost. Just a thought. I mean, it just strikes me as it sounds like could be a great service. It sounds like it's already a good service and could be, linked with the national, in Omaha, Nebraska, they be recording a book that maybe they're doing in North Dakota someplace
This is very unusual that there aren't very many states doing, you know, there is the National Library, but there are not, you can look around quite a bit, there are not very many places recording books on tape at a local level like we're doing.
Well, and the National Library Service's mission is not textbooks, so you know that is a distinction. With the different kinds of services, it would be more akin to the Recording for the Blind and Dyslexic, and there are few of those kinds of entities, excuse me, around the country, just like you said. There really aren't very many, but the thing that we need to try to do, I think, is to make sure that whatever is being done is well enough known that the investment that's put into it is getting the most use. And that, I guess, is my biggest concern. I mean, I certainly remember dealing with the whole situation of readers and all of that, not only in college, but for my whole life in a continuing way. So it's not like this is an issue that is just a student kind of issue. I'm also interested in knowing what happens with the books that you do that are on the programming, like the bookshelf kind of thing, the books that are read that have not been available elsewhere or whatever. Is that a separate library, or is that a library at all, or who are those made available to, if anybody? What happens with that?
You mean the books that we read on air?
Yeah.
Yeah. It sort of depends. I think some of the better quality books that we know will sustain over a long period of time, Dick will archive and will keep and maybe trot those out, you know, poetry and things that will hold up well. A lot of our information is pretty current, and we really don't keep things around too long. But some of the better quality things we've certainly kept, where there's an exceptional reader that will, you know, just people will love to hear this over and over. You know,
we don't read books anymore, full-length books anymore. It's just short stories, other magazines and different.
Yeah, we have a short story time and a mystery time, but we Dick's right, because books are available on tape so many places. We don't read Dr. Zhivago anymore. I mean, people would miss chapter 12 and it would just get a little too confusing. And that's available so many other places.
Really?
Okay. Well, when I say, for example, in Omaha, the public libraries are a wonderful repository of books on tape. Now, I'm not sure. I always thought the Lincoln libraries were pretty well equipped as well. Maybe they're not. I don't know. But I just mean they're available elsewhere. You can go to Borders and buy it. You can get it through the Nebraska Library Commission. In Omaha, you can get books on tape through the Omaha Public Library. So we're trying not to duplicate things that are already out there. So with that. Again, on this cost, I don't want to belabor this cost thing, but I just want to say I completely agree with what Bob Deaton is saying. We're interested in providing the best quality product to the student. And if you raise the price too high, the schools are going to go somewhere else and the student's going to suffer.
Madam Chairman?
Yes.
Mike Lloyd? I just had a couple of quick questions for John. How much are you charging schools per book for one thing?
Oh, I wish Janet was here. I think for tape is $4.50, I believe, per tape.
For tape.
And of course, it depends upon the length of the textbook.
Okay. And then from what I'm gathering, what this worst case scenario is that you'd have to take 10% out of your reserve money to cover the cost of this $20,000. A year until you can find another source of revenue?
Well, I don't know if we're going to find another source of revenue. I mean, giving is down tremendously this year. I mean, we're going to have a very poor year on revenues. The economy is not doing well. I can't assume we're going to find another source of revenue.
Has the organization sought out grants? I mean, I know, like, Omaha Public Schools, they have a foundation associated mm-hmm. with it, mm-hmm. and I don't know if they're grants. I know they do things for artistic things, but I don't
sure.
know if that would be something, like, as an alternative source. And then also, just, you know, on a national level, you have the Foundation Center, which puts together a lot of,
sure.
you know,
sure.
names of philanthropic
groups. Actually, we get most of our money from foundations. Mm-hmm. That's a lot of what I do is write grants and so forth.
I've Got two comments also.
Yes.
When I was, excuse me, when I was a student, I got 99.9% of my textbooks from Reporting for the Blind, and they always had updated editions. But also, we always talk about equality, you know, for the blind, and so equality means equal financial burdens too. And if a sighted student goes down to the school, you know, to buy their textbooks, they pay for their textbooks. Mm-hmm. Now, why couldn't a blind person pay what it would cost for the printed copy? You know, I know we're special people, but not special to the point where we get everything for free.
Do they bring in the textbook, or how do you get the textbook?
Yeah, well, the school provides the textbook. The kid, the student, has bought the textbook and brings it in. And
oh, the student buys the textbook?
Well, I think in some case, you know, the textbook appears and we read it. Now, I don't know, you know, I can't tell you, I'm not sure of that. But the counselor will bring in the textbook, and here's the assignment, and we go with it, I guess. I can't tell you.
Quick clarification, when you say that you charge $4.50 per tape, is that mm-hmm. four-track tape or mm-hmm. just
yes.
four-track?
Yes, it is.
So we're talking about at least 4 to 6 hours in each tape?
I believe so, yes.
Madam Chair?
Was that exchange finished?
Yes.
Okay.
This is Steve Spikehart. Uh-huh. I remember going through law school, spending about 80% of my available energy on scheduling readers, recruiting them, training them, finding a place for the tape recorder. You know, if the batteries are out, you have to find an AC adapter, and all that kind of stuff that a lot of us have been through. And I would offer the consideration that the colleges are already putting in more than $4.50 a tape. It sounds like the counselors are doing a lot of the logistics I used to have to do for myself in terms of locating titles, getting the syllabuses, getting that to RTV, picking up the tapes. If the students had to do that, they'd be out a lot of time and money that they can currently spend on other things, including their studies. And if I'd had a system available like that for me during law school and parts of college, it would have been a big help. So I just wanted to offer that, the colleges appear, from what I've heard, to be putting in a lot more than $4.50 a tape, just in terms of time and the money that they're saving the students and RTV.
Well, Steve, this is Bob Burns. I mean, back in our day in law school and school, you know, the schools, they were required to provide materials for us in alternative formats. So.
No, that's right. I remember this guy who got Senior Volunteer of the Year in Chicago, when you read my antitrust stuff to me. And it was always Xerox that got handed out 2 days before we had to talk about it in class. There's no turnaround for taping, certainly not for RFB. And RFB, anything I could find from them was always at least one, usually two editions behind. So knowing that the page numbers matched the syllabi. if it works, it works. But, you know, a lot of us use Slayton Stylus for something, Perkins Writer for something else, BrailleNote or BrailleLife when one's available, or talk to computer. So they're right tools for particular jobs. And I hope we can maintain the diversity and maintain the options for the kids.
But I go back to now the schools are required to provide the materials, and so they're going to naturally gravitate to something like Listening Link. I mean, they don't want to reinvent the wheel. If there's something in Listening Link.
It helps them a lot, and if you get into an ADA dispute with the school, you wind up with delays that just hurt the student.
Well, but they recognize that the materials have to be provided, and if Listening Link's available, you know, they're going to turn to it. It's going to be natural. And I was just wondering why couldn't Listening Link charge, you know, now they're basically giving away the service. Sure, the schools are going to love that. They're going to eat that up. But guess what? Basically, part of what we're doing is the Commission for the Blind has given Radio Talking Book $20,000 or $50,000 total, but so that they can give the turnaround and give the schools subsidized recording. And, you know, maybe we could cut out the middleman if the state's going to have to pay for it, national, you know, the commission. Then maybe the commission should just set up a, you know, some kind of a recording program or work with the schools to do it. We're kind of doing it now. I'm thinking that why shouldn't Listening Link exist? It sounds like a great deal, and I don't see why they can't charge a little bit more, because the schools are going to love to deal with one place and not have to drum up volunteer readers or student readers to record materials. But I think Listening Link is a great idea and could be a, you know, something that the schools would turn to first and pay a little bit to just for the convenience, and if the quality's there, the students are going to be happy, and it's just going to be a great all-around situation.
I'm not so sure that the schools, some schools, if they're having a budget problem, wouldn't just say to their handicap assistance office, since all schools are required to have one, and they'll just tell their program coordinator, okay, it's up to you to go out there and find the coordinators. You know, we're washing our hands of this. You find the readers in order for us to meet ADA compliance. And then they won't think about it anymore. You know, it's not that big of a headache to from an administrative standpoint to do that. And unfortunately, I've seen enough of that in different schools to know that that's what most of them do. And basically what you have is a quality control problem, you know. Somebody might get started on a book and then something happens and they quit. And then you got to scramble to find another reader to finish the book. Or, you know, there's just all kinds of problems that happen in that kind of a system. So yes, you can go ahead and charge for a service like listening link, but I'm not so sure that the schools will not, in fact, go out for
it. Hi, comment. I'm not trying to be against or for it. I'm just trying to clarify, because with simple math, if we are talking about the schools hiring students to record a book, they will pay at least minimum wage per hour. And if Radio Token Book is charging only $4.50 for 6 hours, to me that's, the schools are not going to be out to look for something cheaper than minimum wage. So if the Radio Token Book starts charging whatever amount of number of hours in each tape, let's assume 5 okay. times minimum wage, let me finish my,
okay.
it will be $25 per tape. And so why is that going to be cheaper than where else, when they will pay that number of money to the students who are recording the books anyway?
If they're paying the students. I guess I was thinking that the volunteers and handicapped assistance offices will typically use their unpaid.
Oh, no. They pay students.
Do they?
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if too many students who are going to volunteer.
Right, they pay students.
But I just, another comment, we're making this a student issue when my understanding is the majority of consumers of Radio Talking Book are the elderly. And so I think we've kind of...
We're talking about listening link versus
okay.
You know, specifically.
I do think, though, that your point is well taken, in the sense that when we're talking about the program as a whole, we need to concentrate on not only the listening link aspect of it, but also the Radio Talking Book service itself. Now the descriptive video part of it too, or the audio description, how much of I know you said you didn't really break down the budget into the specific programs. The Radio Talking Book does because of overlap and so forth, but you did come up with at least a ballpark figure of $40,000 for the listening link. What amount do you think per year it takes to run the other two major components of the, how does that divide itself up, the audio description and the broadcast itself?
Well, of course, the Radio Talking Book Network is by far the biggest, you know, it the biggest part of what we do. It's hard to, you know, when we do our budget, we just don't break it down that way. I can tell you that our rent per year is $36,000. Our program salaries are $84,500. Our administrative salaries are $25,000. And on and on. I know the audio... So, you know, I'm not, again, just kind of a guesstimate. We could, you know, put a figure on audio description of, say, 15,000 to 20,000. Although, in some respects, the program pays for itself in many ways, because, you know, people are going to the Omaha Community Playhouse, the Symphony, Shakespeare on the Green, the Diner Theater. And in most cases, they're paying their freight. I mean, they're paying for the ticket. So a lot of what we're talking about here is the coordination and the planning. And Dick spends untold hours, you know, not only on during work time on weekdays, but weeknights and weekends coordinating this. So I just, you know, out of that 230, I can, you know, I don't have it broken down on, you know, when he's working on the audio description, he's also doing station breaks and things. I mean, we just haven't gotten at that.
Well, doesn't the audio description consist of the equipment, which has to be maintained?
Right.
And then basically our volunteers,
right,
that do it, and so it's...
Right,
it's,
and lining up drivers, perhaps renting a bus.
So the transportation, you
the
provide
transportation's
that.
Always, oh yeah, oh yeah. Okay. The transportation is a tremendously big issue.
And that's all free, you don't charge for that?
It's, typically we'll get volunteers for transportation. Now when there's a couple weeks ago, was it 2 weeks ago? We went on a mystery bus trip and a bus was rented for that. But
and so that's free to the users?
Yeah.
No, we always pay them.
Yeah, they pay, so, you know, they'll pay the
bus
the
was underwritten by OAP. But the, all the concessions that we did make during the trip was paid for by the participants.
So the transportation doesn't really cost RTB anything, that's
no,
provided through other sources.
Not
but,
that particular,
but it's coordinated.
Not in that particular case. We paid for transportation before, but not in this particular case.
And you don't charge for the recipients to get the transportation?
In this case, as Dick said, this one was underwritten, so it wasn't billed into the cost of the ticket. And in a lot of cases where things are local, we'll have, you know, local drivers will pick up two or three people, take them to the event, spend the evening with them, and take them home. So, you know, and again, people will pay for their own ticket, whether that includes, in some cases, maybe even include a meal. So that's, you know, if you look at it on the surface, it's a wash. But again, we...
Do you know how many descriptive pieces of equipment that you have? The receivers and the...
Oh, we've got about 50 receivers, two transmitters. That's all the equipment.
Are they pretty reliable, or do they require a lot of maintenance?
I've, in the last 10 years, I think I've lost three.
So
and this is...
That's pretty good for electronics.
It is.
Yeah, well, he maintains them real well.
And we, of course, we have to buy batteries for them. That 6 bits of battery, then that isn't that much to worry about.
Sure.
Oh, it just makes my life, these different things that we're doing. When he calls to say, yes, we're going to go on a picnic, or we're going to go to this museum. We went to the museum where you could feel the different things. At first I thought, how do you go to a museum? How can we see? But surely they're telling us what we're seeing, and there were statues around. We came down to Lincoln and they saw the statues. There weren't statues down here when I went to school in Lincoln. But now there are, and we could feel them and see what they were like. I just live for the wonderful things that we do. When he calls and says, tells me we're going to do something. Somebody came up to me one time and said, oh yes, Ruth, you're the lady that goes to everything. Well, I think that's a wonderful reputation. Anyway, I like it. I love it. And then I appreciate it so much. Life would be very dreary. None of my children live here. It would be very quiet by myself. It would be very difficult to live in my house alone, where I know I walk up to Walner's there on 52nd and Leavenworth to get my groceries. I've been going for years. And they know just how to put it in my backpack. Then my other hand's free for my wife, so I carry all my groceries home in my backpack. And they say, no, 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 not the eggs. I say, not the eggs, they'll break. No, this one little girl says, I know how to do it. And believe you me, she did pack my backpack, and I didn't break an egg that time. Anyway, that's what keeps me here. That's what makes life for me now. Otherwise, it would be hard, very difficult, very difficult. But those are the bright spots that I put on my calendar. When I have that voice and he says, well, do you want to go someplace? I say, sure.